Welcome to the Deep Dive. This is where we take sources you're curious about, dig in, and pull out the key insights, the stuff that really makes you think, aha.
Exactly. And today, we're tackling something really interesting. It's episode 45 from the YouTube channel, Military Tales. The specific one is called OGTA, Debrief the Coal, John Mollison's story, Who's the Guy in Back?
OGTA, Old Guys and Their Airplanes.
That's the one. So a listener sent us the transcript from this episode, and our mission basically is to unpack the story. We want to get at the events, sure, but also the viewpoints of the people involved in making this episode.
Right, understand the whole picture. And the key people here are John Mollison. He's the aviation artist, part of that OGTA crew.
Yes, and then there's Colonel John Mollison, the main subject, USAF veteran, highly decorated, and this is fascinating, an alumnus of Boys Town.
Which adds a whole other dimension. And there's also Colonel Warren Eastman, another USAF vet, who was a backseater himself.
Correct. He brings that direct experience to the conversation in the video.
Okay, so the title itself, Who's the Guy in Back? It definitely grabs you. Where did that question even come from?
Well, it actually started with John Mollison, the artist.
Yeah.
He was doing a drawing, to commemorate pilot Jonathan Hayes, who, by the way, earned 5 Distinguished Flying Crosses. Just incredible.
Wow, 5. Okay.
Yeah. So Mollison, the artist, is looking at the reference photos of Hayes' F-4 Phantom, and he sees his own name listed as the backseat occupant.
Wait, his own name? Like the artist's name?
Exactly. Which, you know, obviously sparked the question, who was this other John Mollison, and what did the guy in back actually do?
The mystery of the WSO, or the RIO, or the GIB, as they call it.
Precisely. And then you have that Boys Town connection, because Colonel John Mollison, the actual guy in back, turns out to be a graduate. It's sort of this amazing coincidence that shapes this whole episode.
It really is. Okay, so let's talk about Colonel Mollison's background, because the episode goes into that, and it's quite a story.
Oh, absolutely. He was born in Italy, 1946. His father was an American GI, his mother an Italian war bride. His dad, as the colonel puts it, sort of liberated her from Rome during the war.
What a start to life. Post-war Italy, then straight to the U.S.
Right. June 46, he and his mother get on the SS Volcania with about 2,500 other war brides and kids. They come through Ellis Island, then take a train all the way out to California to meet his father, who was still overseas when John was born.
But it sounds like things weren't easy once they got here. The episode mentioned some real hardship early on.
Definitely. Colonel Mollison talks about his father being, well, kind of restless, moving the family around a lot. Nevada, Utah, eventually Texas. And often they were really poor. Mm-hmm. He mentions one winter in this tiny tar-papered shack.
That sounds incredibly tough.
Yeah, and things got so bad at one point that the 4 oldest kids, including John, were actually placed in an orphanage in Lubbock for a time.
Wow, that's rough. But it seems like his mother was a really positive force through all that.
Absolutely. He speaks so warmly of her, calls her an extremely positive woman, always making sure there was food, laughter, love, you know, no matter how tough things were.
Yeah.
And she was the one who actually made the connection to Boys Town for him and his brother Art.
Ah, okay. So Boys Town wasn't like a punishment or anything. It was more of an opportunity.
Exactly. He's very clear on that in the episode. He says his mother made a brave choice for them. And for him, Boys Town was like a whole new beginning. Interestingly, his first passion there was music.
Music, really?
Yeah, played violin, trumpet, viola, sang in the choir, even toured with them. His plan originally was to become a music teacher.
So how do you go from wanting to be a music teacher to, well, flying fighter jets in Vietnam? That's quite a leap.
Well, the Vietnam War was ramping up. He was at a land-grant college in 64. ROTC was mandatory for the first couple of years. And he kind of figured, you know, Army guys are going to be on the ground. Air Force guys got to fly jets. Seemed a bit safer, maybe better pay, too.
A pragmatic choice for the times, I guess.
Pretty much. So he picked the Air Force. He still thought, initially, he'd do his tour and then go back to music.
But obviously that changed.
It did. He got involved and things took a different path. Which brings us right back to that core question from the episode title. What is the role of the guy in back? Why was that second person so critical, especially in something like the F-4 Phantom during Vietnam?
Right. Let's dig into that because, you know, the pilot usually gets all the glory. What was the backseater actually doing?
A lot. You see, weapons delivery was getting way more complicated by then.
Yeah.
The F-4 Phantom, which the Navy developed first but the Air Force adopted too, really needed that second crew member.
Okay. And they had different names for them, right?
Yeah. In the Navy and Marines, it was RIO, Radar Intercept Officer. Air Force called him WSO, Weapon Systems Officer. But the common nickname, the one everyone used, was GIB.
GIB. Guy in back. Simple enough.
Yep. And their job was way more than just being an extra pair of eyes, though that was important too. They helped manage the complex weapon systems, handle navigation, radar operation, target acquisition. Especially in the F-4, a lot of the heavy lifting with radar and finding targets air-to-air or air-to-ground fell to the GIB.
So it was a real team effort in that cockpit. The pilot couldn't really use the plane to its full potential without the GIB.
Absolutely not. It was designed as a two-person system, really. You needed both to make it work effectively. Which leads us to that specific mission, March 8, 1971. The one where both the pilot, Jonathan Hayes, and Colonel Mollison, the GIB, got the Distinguished Flying Cross.
Okay, tell us about that. That sounds like it was during a really intense period, Operation Lamsun 719.
Extremely intense. Lamsun 719 was this major push to cut the Ho Chi Minh Trail, kind of test the South Vietnamese Army's ground abilities. And by early March 71, things were looking pretty grim. The South Vietnamese were retreating under heavy pressure.
So what was their mission supposed to be?
Initially, they were tasked to lay down a smokescreen, basically provide cover for the retreating South Vietnamese troops.
But things didn't go according to plan, I take it. The weather, maybe?
Exactly. The weather was terrible. Low clouds, rain. The standard smoke canisters they had wouldn't work properly. They needed to be dropped higher up to disperse. But then their flight lead had this pretty ingenious, maybe slightly crazy idea.
Uh-oh. What was that?
He realized that if they dropped the canisters really low, like below 25 feet, the impact would actually ignite them, and they'd burn white phosphorus.
White phosphorus. Wow. Okay, so that's dangerous stuff. How did they decide to use that?
Well, they got a call asking for something, anything, that could start fires on the ground. A forward air controller at FAC pointed out this suspected ammo dump hidden under camouflage near the Ho Chi Minh Trail.
So they went for it, flying below 25 feet.
Yep. Multiple passes right over the target, dodging AK-47 fire coming up at them, dropping these canisters. I mean, the risk was immense.
Unbelievable courage. Did it work?
Did it ever. The ammo dump went up in this huge explosion. Apparently, it burned for 3 days straight.
3 days. That's incredible.
Yeah. But what's striking is Colonel Mollison's reaction. Even now, he just saw it as doing the job, you know, fulfilling the mission. He didn't really think it was anything medal-worthy. Duty.
That kind of humility, it's pretty remarkable, isn't it? Especially given the danger, it makes you think about that teamwork aspect again.
It really does. And the episode contrasts that kind of mutual reliance, that intense accountability you have in a two-person cockpit with, say, modern online culture, which can sometimes feel much more individualistic, maybe less accountable.
That's a really interesting point. Online, you can kind of say whatever, right? The consequences aren't always immediate or direct. But in that F-4 cockpit.
Yeah, you're literally tied to the person next to you. Your life depends on them. The mission depends on both of you. You're accountable to each other, to the squadron, to the mission itself. There's no hiding.
And it sounds like that sense of teamwork and responsibility for Colonel Mollison didn't just start in the Air Force. Boys Town seems to have been really formative for him in that respect, too.
Absolutely. He makes it very clear he holds no grudge about being sent there. He saw it as a place that gave him structure, control over his life, opportunity, after, you know, that pretty chaotic childhood.
So what was it about Boys Town that instilled that, the work ethic?
Yeah, that was a big part of it, according to the episode. Having assigned jobs, getting recognition for doing them well, it taught him that effort pays off. It built his confidence, his ability to make decisions, solve problems, and importantly, it taught him how to deal with failure and just keep going. Resilience, basically.
Those are fundamental life skills. You can see how that would translate directly to a military career, especially under pressure.
For sure. And the Q&A session in the video adds even more layers, like just the sheer amount of work that goes into getting one jet ready for one mission.
Right. All the ground crews, maintenance, ordnance guys.
Hours and hours of teamwork before the pilots even step near the plane. It's easy to forget that whole hidden side of things. They also talked about the F-4's speed Mach 2 plus, trying to process everything, make life or death calls at, you know, 1,500 miles per hour.
Just mind-boggling. It really emphasizes why you needed that second person, that constant communication and trust.
Totally. And how technology changed things, too. Going from the F-4's analog dials and gauges to the digital glass cockpits in later jets like the F-15 that changed the whole dynamic, the workload distribution between pilot and WSO.
Did they touch on any more everyday realities?
Yeah. There was a whole piddle pack discussion. You know how you manage bodily functions on really long flights.
Right. The less glamorous side of being a fighter jock.
Exactly. But it grounds it. You know, makes these incredible feats seem a bit more human. But Beyond that, Colonel Wallison talked again about what kept him going through tough times, those boys' town lessons, always looking forward, working hard. And he mentioned specific mentors, like a sixth grade teacher who got him into reading, a high school English teacher who taught him the value of effort.
Those early influences are so key. And the episode mentioned he got another DFC.
Yeah, his second one was for a gunship escort mission. They ran into heavy enemy fire, secondary explosions from the target, just incredibly dangerous stuff again. But his mindset, he said, was always focus on the target, trust the plane, trust your training, trust your wingman.
Intense focus. And that delayed explosion from the ammo dump on the first DFC mission, that must have been something to see, even from a distance.
Oh, I imagine so. Just reinforces the scale of what they achieved.
And finally, they talked a bit about social media, didn't they? The colonel's perspective on it today?
They did. Both of them kind of acknowledged its usefulness for communication, but also had concerns, you know?
Mm-hmm.
About how it affects real connection, accountability, how easily it could be misused compared to the kind of direct interaction and responsibility they were used to.
As a generational perspective, but a valid one. And Colonel Mollison's advice at the end.
Yeah. Pretty straightforward, but powerful. Work hard, set goals, be kind, keep going. It's like a pretty good summary of the lessons from his own life.
It really does. So looking back at this whole Military Tales episode, it's way more than just a war story, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It's Colonel Mollison's personal journey. It's a deep dive into the critical, often overlooked role of the backseat officer. It's about teamwork under extreme pressure, the impact of places like Boys Town.
Mm-hmm.
Hearing it directly from them, it just adds so much depth and perspective.
It really does. So maybe a final thought for you listening. Think about the unsung heroes, the guys and gals in back, in whatever field you're interested in, the people whose work is essential but maybe not always visible. How does recognizing their contribution change how we think about success and what it takes to achieve something big? Definitely something to chew on after this deep dive. Thanks for joining us.